Rose and Doug Phillips asked each other, "How can we spend every day together doing what we love?" Their answer was conscious clothing. For two decades, they built their business on this premise, even building the gorgeous sun-filled Michigan studio where their team of 10 designs and makes each piece of organic and natural fiber clothing. Things haven't always been dreamy, though. As the brand grew, work started to creep into the weekends. The pandemic hit. Then Doug lost his life and business partner. But the heartfelt vision for conscious clothing remained. In this interview, Doug and general manager Liz DeBraber share how they're intentionally restructuring the business for the sake of themselves, their team, and their customers. Hear how Liz is completely revamping Conscious Clothing's pattern library to better fit their customers, what they changed to keep the business from taking over their life, and how the industry and consumer values about organic clothing has changed over the 20 plus years they've been in business. Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help womenswear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode. Today, I'm joined by Doug Phillips and Liz DeBraber of Conscious Clothing. So welcome to How Fitting.
Hey, how are you?
Thank you.
So the name is Conscious Clothing. I'm curious, what are you both most conscious about these days in the business?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's been over 23 years of being conscious, and it started out with being conscious about the fabrics. And I think that's a big piece of it. It's really the entire system as we produce everything in-house in our Michigan-based studio. So it's really a conscious lifestyle for everyone who is a part of the team and a part of doing this. And that's really our big focal point.
Yeah, I think for me, it's about, I'm the general manager, so I'm making sure, you know, production runs smoothly. And I always am thinking like, what's the most sustainable way, not just for us in terms of material or time or other things, but in terms of us as humans? Like, is this something that we can hold for a long time with the humans that we have working for us, to make sure that we are truly conscious of how the whole system impacts both us working here, but also the people who are wearing our clothes. We just take every decision and we try to be very thoughtful in what we do.
Yeah, I totally love that. And that's kind of the whole premise of this podcast, is hearing how brands are really fitting their customer, their lifestyle, their values. Like, it's such a bigger holistic picture where like fashion is part of it, but the people is also a big part of it. And you can't, you know, have well-fitting clothes without fitting the humans involved as well. Like, there has to be a reference to who are we fitting with these clothes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this kind of all started out, well, it started out as my wife, Rose Phillips, over 23 years ago, making clothes for her kids and friends seeing it. And she had sourced some of the back then hard to find organic materials, looking for to make organic diapers for her kids, and then had friends interested in it, and it just kind of expanded from there. And then I joined on with her about 16 years ago, and it was really a love story. And it just kind of grew from, how can we spend every day together and be doing something really creative and fun that's beneficial to the people we're making stuff for. And so that was kind of our premise. And so, yeah, when you talk about it being good for the people involved, that's kind of a big part of our start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So often in fashion business, I feel like as the businesses grow, it starts to like take over your life in a way that you didn't intend. Like there, you know, often at the start, there is that picture of, oh, we'd love to have this type of life together. Like, let's start this business that's going to allow us to do that. And then somehow like the business takes over and starts like running the people instead of you running the business. How have you grown Conscious Clothing in a way that is truly protecting and creating that life that you want and not letting it kind of take over those things that are the whole reason why you started in the first place?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it is all consuming. It does become all consuming. And for years, we did the all consuming workload of, now we're working on Saturday. Oh, and hey, guess what? We're in here on Sunday too. Haha. And it's at our home. So it's real easy to go, oh, I'm just going to go take care of this one thing. I just need to get ahead a little just for Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just. Yeah. Before you know it, your kids are like, Mom, where are you? Come play with us. So yeah, there is that balance. This was 2019 before COVID. Rose was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And so we battled that out for the next 2.5 years until she passed in August of 22. And after that, a lot of things changed. And I lost my partner, my business partner, the love of my life. And I think after that point, I said, you know what, I need to have a weekend. I need to not be in here working on the weekends. So tragedy kind of forced me to reexamine the workload, because it is all consuming when you're doing your own thing. I saw a great meme, you know, it was like, oh, the entrepreneur of 2025, and they're a marketing person and a, you know, a professional photographer, not to mention making cool stuff. And it's ridiculous. That's the way it is now. That's the world, the level of competition out there to be in business for yourself. So yeah, you just have to take your life back, I think.
Yeah, and I think I've been here for 8 years, and so I was sewing. I was the head sewist. And when Rose passed, it was like, well, I have all this knowledge and I've been a manager before. And I was like, we need to create systems that make it sustainable. And so we spent the last 2 years really creating systems that everybody is in the know. So anybody can go and check our production sheet and they can say, oh, this is what I need to do next. So it wasn't all, I mean, before Rose was brilliant, it was all in her head. And I was like, we need to get it out of heads. So just one person isn't holding all the information.
Yeah.
And we democratize the information and what needs to happen. So somebody can come in and say they come in early, they can go, they can check it out, and they know exactly what they need to do, and they can start working. I think that was our biggest step to make it more sustainable, again, for the humans who work here.
Yeah, because it started out that, you know, hey, we're just sewing in the front room of our home. And, you know, just grows and grows. And in 2015, we added a studio to the back of at a woodworking shop. And we added on a great big building. And, it just keeps growing. And, and then, like Liz said, we had to have systems all of a sudden to understand all the moving parts. And, that really saved us. And then all of a sudden it went from, you know, all the joy is still there, don't get me wrong, but it kind of turned into a business all of a sudden. You know? Oh man, now we got things we got to all follow and pay attention to. But hey, we still have all the music we want to listen to on the radio, and our relationships between each other.
And we have a beautiful space to be in. I think for me, the piece that I keep looking at is, where are the obstacles? Where are the things that don't feel good? Where are the things that are slowing us down? Because that calls to me like, oh, that's a bottleneck and that needs to be looked at. So what can we do to reduce the friction of the process so that, you know, like there's certain pieces we have had that I remember sewing and crying over and going, yeah, nobody needs, it's not enough for us, you know, and then having to train people on and going, you might cry. Like, no, we just sell that item, you know, or looking at how we pattern things. And that's been a huge focus for us is the patterning took weeks and weeks to have a finished product. And they were all handmade. And so if anybody made an adjustment to a pattern, it would take so much time. And so, you know, that was one of the things we did was we decided to digitize all the patterns and Doug learned all the software.
Yeah,
we bought a plotter printer.
Nice.
Yeah, the big change for us going digital and having our own equipment in-house. Again, everything's in-house. And why? Because every time we went out of house, there was always something that just wasn't quite right or this and that. And so, you know, we're not control freaks, but it's have the ability to handle things and know the timeline and keep getting stuff out to your customer.
And also, I mean, being a small business, you have to be so mindful of where your money goes. And if you spend a lot of money and put it out into the world and it comes back and it's not up to your standards and it means more work for you or it means a product that you now can't sell, then that's a huge hit to the budget. So having control over the whole process has been a way to make us financially sound and helped us be sustainable in the sense that we know who's doing every aspect, you know, of the work. Mm-hmm. And we know that if there's a problem, I can catch it on step two instead of step five, you know, and that makes a huge difference financially for us.
And also going from, well, just being able to adjust our production. I mean, when things got busy for everybody in 2021, when it was COVID lockdown and people had stimulus money.
And we're on the computers all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And our online website was going crazy and we had all kinds of orders. So we were doing kind of running stock on items, making runs of things and then having them on hand. And then as things ebbed, we went to a pull system where we're only producing what we have orders for. And, you know, and we've done the making runs of stuff, doing a pull system, and then we've done what we call a pull plus where, yeah, we have an order for a medium and in black and we'll make two of them because we know that size and color will most likely sell in the near future. So we're able to be smart with our production and that translates to, you know, material cost and not a huge output in construction cost and can kind of be really agile and adjust to what's going on with the level of sales.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many things in this that I wanted to dive into more. So it sounds like the shift kind of with COVID and with Rose getting sick and passing away, like those two things, kind of the big catalyst for more the systemization, was that primarily to have your weekends back, to have a little bit more, like I know you said, Liz, you said the democratization of the information that's not all in one person's head. But was that also more, you spoke a little bit to, you know, helping kind of financially make sure that the business is working? Like what was kind of the, your pricing or like, how was the finances working before that? Was that a big difference in what the system is?
Oh boy. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was everything all at once and it was kind of do or die, you know, it was, I mean, wow, COVID lockdown. And then, you know, you're, partner gets sick with cancer and you have to step away from the business already in handling that. And I mean, it was her and I in here 7 days a week and suddenly we're at appointments 3 and 4 and 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. And we just weren't physically in here. So yeah, it became apparent real quick that a lot of things needed to change. And then, you know, living through the grief of the loss of mm-hmm. her, and then the sun still comes up every day and right. everyone's showing up and right. well, how and what are we going to do? And thank God, Liz was like, yeah, I think we really need to make these changes to keep us yeah. sustainable.
Yeah. And I think I always say Rose was just magic, and what she did was magical, but she was gone. And I was like, I don't have that same kind of magic. So I have to work for it. So I spent the first year just analyzing everything and looking at how we costed things and looking at what were the fabrics that sold and what weren't, and what sizes were the sizes that sold and what weren't, and pieces. I mean, I love spreadsheets before. But I really I just went right into those spreadsheets. I made so many spreadsheets, Doug, which is just like, oh, another spreadsheet. But it gave me enough of a base to look at what is actually working here. What is the magic that Rose created, and how can we build on it? Because, you know, a lot of people bought because Rose was the person who's making it, and she wasn't there anymore, and there was a lot of grief in that. Mm-hmm. And we were like, I felt I wanted to continue Rose's legacy and keep this thing going, because it's an amazing business and it's a really special place. And the only way I could do it was to analyze everything and look at everything and make sure our costing was appropriate. And I mean, they had been distracted for several years, and there were things that they didn't have time to look at. So
we never looked at things that way. I mean, this was straight up an artist. You know, she was an artist making art, and honestly, most of the time the business person is not coupled with the artist. So you know, luckily, Liz had all this organizational skill and background, and you know, and my main thing was expanding the mission of organic fibers to more people. I just wanted to reach as many people as possible with it, and in all the ways that we could do that, which some of we can talk about. Yeah. You know, one component was inclusive sizing, where yeah. we saw huge gaps in the market with that, with people reaching yeah. out to us with requests for things like that. And how can we expand this mission? And, you know, you got to deal with the day-to-day production. And, you know, it was just all the things all at once. It was like, oh, and how do we also standardize all our patterns? Because Rose, being an artist, would create something. We had a veteran pattern maker that would come in and go, okay, well, sure, I can grade this, but you know, this medium isn't going to fit like this other medium, because mm-hmm. they're totally different. So right. okay, how do we make things easier on our website for people to shop? And a medium is a medium, and our conscious clothing across the brand, how do we do that? Well, you know, again, software, that's the only way to really at scale tackle a catalog of what 80, 100 pieces.
Yeah, we had 85 pieces. We've got it down to 62 pieces, but that's still an enormous amount. So that has been one of my huge projects in the last year plus, is figuring out what are the actual measurements of the bodies that we are going for, and then how do we do that? And that's part of the reason we got the pattern software, and we are expanding our larger sizes, because I'm a larger bodied person, and there's a lot of things that just don't quite fit. And I, mm-hmm. you know, I want to feel good about selling clothing to people who look like me, or, you know, have differences in what the typical body is. And yeah, we want to make sure everyone has a chance. That's part of the being conscious. Everyone should be able to buy clothing that's made out of organic plant fibers, that is going to last a long time and is going to feel good when you wear it. You know, mm-hmm. everyone should have that chance. So that's been one of our huge projects, is yeah. standardization. And we're not done yet.
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing. Just out of curiosity, what pattern software did you end up getting?
We ended up going with Audacis, which has been the standard in South America for several decades. Okay. It's fantastic. I really like it.
Most days it's fantastic.
Most days it's fantastic. Well, a lot of it is the plotter, and there's just so many things when you're doing it on your own and, you know, you've got limited support. You have to be resourceful and figure out, oh, why the heck isn't this doing there? Why is it doing this? Yeah. And so, yeah, big learning curve. And but the software was pretty straightforward. I had experience with like Google SketchUp in the past.
Another CAD thing.
Yeah, another CAD thing. And the tools are all pretty... you know, right there. It has a really nice grading setup on it. I really like the grading mm-hmm. on it. And we got a marker set up if we ever decided to go into, you know, CNC production, which I don't see us doing anytime soon, just the volume needed to do something like that. We thought of a single ply cutter, which is typically for making samples, but mm-hmm. Even that, I don't know. I know to get the vacuum on some of those conveyor tables, they use plastic over everything. Yeah. And I'm not really geeked about that idea either. So,
and it's a big noisy machine.
Yeah, right. And,
again, quality of our workspace is really important. And,
yeah,
you know, it might happen. But I think the bigger piece was getting those patterns and, yeah, to fit really well and to be like finesse it, you know, make it so when you put on a piece of conscious clothing, you're like, dang, that fits really well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's taken a lot of R&D to do that.
For sure. And one of the most difficult tasks ever, because no two bodies are the same.
Nope. Yep.
And you got to come up with a generalized thing. And it's right. Like, we really encourage people to get a relationship with your local tailor
right.
And, you know, find a brand you enjoy or several brands you enjoy and you like their ethics and want to support them, and then find a tailor, and then you can really dial it in
if you want to.
Yeah, if you want to. A lot of stuff yeah. fits great off the rack.
Yeah, but I think for us, one of our big things is we've talked about classic styling. So classic pieces that are gonna not be so trendy, but they're gonna last you a long time. And if you choose to, if you're like, yeah, I really want this tailored, you can go get it tailored. But if you put it on, it's gonna be a little bit boxier fit, but it's an aesthetic that we're choosing so that people can, lots of different body types can fit in our clothing. We are always aware of that, always, you know, in tune with that.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't have anything really form fitting other than our activewear line, which
in the Catherine Vest, we have one piece that's
one piece
like,
that's fitted.
Yeah. We just went for it, but you know,
yeah, test it out. So one thing that you mentioned, Liz, that I don't want to gloss over because I feel like it's a really important aspect to fit that I'm always talking about with my clients as a pattern maker, is understanding and paying attention and standardizing, like, what are the body measurements that we're trying to fit with each of these sizes? And I think that is so often a missing piece, where even once brands like standardize their pattern shapes, they don't necessarily have kind of mapped out, okay, what is the body measurements that we're fitting with our medium? What are the body measurements that we're fitting with our 2X or our 4X or, you know, whatever size? And that paying attention to the customer in that way, I think, is hugely beneficial for fit. So I'm curious, did you have any sort of standardization in terms of the body measurements before, or was that something also that you've been building as you've digitized and standardized the patterns? And what did that process look like for you?
Yeah, this has been my last year. Our pattern maker, Kieran, I just want to shout her out. She's amazing. She's had decades of experience. And she really delved into the sizing and finding, like, you just need these hard and fast numbers. You cannot go forward until you have these hard and fast numbers. And deciding what they it's a really difficult decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
She looked at Alvanon.
Mm-hmm.
And most people who are working patterns know that. And for the what we call the straight sizes, so the smaller sizes, will be our extra extra small to our extra large, those are pretty straightforward, you know, and determining what the difference between each size, like there's 2 inches between, you know, the extra small and the small, and then from the medium to large, it goes to 3 inches change. And those are pretty straightforward. It's with the curvier sizes. So the what will be are 1 through 6. So 1X through 6X, we're just going to call them 1 through 6. And how to make those, the 6X, the hips, the hip measurement will be about 70 inches. Okay. And there's no, there's just such a small amount of work that people have done with it. There's being more and more all the time. But just trying to figure it out. And it's like big corporations don't necessarily have it figured out terribly well. There's not a really, there's not much structure around it. Mm-hmm. And so we were just like, okay, we have to decide. And so that's where working with human bodies, real human bodies, yeah, instead of just a mathematical approach made a huge difference. So we have a couple models who are fitting in about that 6X size and just making things and saying, how does this feel on your body? Mm-hmm. What, you know, what is it that you would want differently? And even giving them, you know, pieces of clothing and saying, okay, go home, wash this, wash it terribly, put it back on. Tell me what's happening. Tell me what, you know, is it suddenly gaping in the front? Is it, you know, is the rise in the back riding up, or is it shrinking, or, you know, mm-hmm. we're just trying to really put the human into the sizing, because if you know any, which of course you do, the sizing, how things got sized is kind of a messed up story. Mm-hmm. And they weren't taking humans into account. They certainly weren't taking female body humans into account. Mm-hmm. So we're really trying to do this work. And in some ways it's cutting edge, and it's a little bit ridiculous that a company of 10 people are trying to do this, yeah. But you know, why not? Right? Like, this is about being conscious of how our clothing fits. And so it fits right into our things, but it's been a long process. And we made our size 6 dress form, because they don't exist. You cannot get them. You cannot buy one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that. So, that's got to be such a fun project.
Oh, Susie. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
That's one word for it. Yep. Yeah. I mean, it was great, but it was a lot of hard work, and we both learned a lot.
Yeah. We had foam and pipe and hacksaws.
Hands deep into somebody's, you know, body cavity. Mm-hmm. But that's fine. But anyway, so now we have that. And again, we base that on both Alvinon, but also what does a real human body look like? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we've been working on.
I love that. And your whole approach to, especially I feel like plus sizes, you know, beyond extra large, are so inconsistent and often fit terribly in so many brands. Mm-hmm. And then they're wondering mm-hmm. why they don't sell. It's because they don't fit. Yeah. So the dedication of your team to really put in the effort to really work with people in that size to find out what would make these clothes amazing. Mm-hmm. It is really admirable. I love to see it.
Yeah, we're working so hard to get this rolled out. It's been such a long process, and Doug's been
I'm like, oh my gosh, when?
When? And I'm like, okay, but it's really hard. And yeah. We're running clothing companies. Yeah, it's so, not like there's an R&D department. Mm-hmm. It's for me. Sure.
So. Yeah. And we're balancing production with the R&D and the mm-hmm. and this dream project of having everything standard, you know. So someday somebody could come on our website and we could have a widget. They could enter their height and weight, and it would tell you, yeah, you should get this size. We have all our models pictured in the listings with their measurements, so mm-hmm. you can look at their body type and get an idea of how they're fitting.
Right. But not everybody wants to do math in order to buy.
Yeah. Totally.
And we you know, in some of our research that we've done with our own customers, it's been like, well, our customers take about a month to make a purchase. They're not going to be quick because they're being conscious. It's slow fashion. And I think some of it is, you know, they're like, okay, what size do I really want? Mm-hmm. Is this going to work for me? And Audra, who does our website and she's our customer service, she does so much. She does a lot of customer service and we're proud of that work, but also it's a lot of work for her. So again, looking at our workflow and what takes a lot of time. Working with customers takes time. We want to be there for our customers, but if we can make it easier for people to look at our garments and say, yes, this is what I want, and yes, I'm pretty sure that's going to fit me, then that's just better for our company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there an easier way to be there for the customer, it sounds like?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I mean, we try and give information, but sometimes that can be overwhelming. It's such a fine balance to figure out what, you know, you don't want to over-inform, but you don't want people to be just be stabbing in the dark and then be disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And Audra is great at offering that service of the communication and mm-hmm. being like, okay, well, how do you want these pants to fit? Do you usually wear your stuff a little roomier? Or right. I mean, you know, you could go either way with it. You're on the fence of a medium or a large, and mm-hmm. you know, well, that comes down to some personal preferences too.
It absolutely does, and it's not like that's going to go away. It's just we want it to be as clear as possible. And so we're, you know, we're trying to make it so like, oh, I have a medium painter top and I want to buy this new top and I'm going to know that it's going to fit just like my other medium in the bust area. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, we've had like 2-3-4 inch differences in the medium. Wow. It's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes style-wise, you know, if it's like knit versus woven, that makes sense. But if it's like two woven right. tops that are kind of similar yep. and, yeah, yep. vastly different yep. size, that can be tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the starting point for us.
I just had a hilarious idea. We should print fabric measuring tapes and put them in every order so everybody has a tape measure at home, because a lot of people are I don't know.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, I mean, knowing how to measure yourself is a skill. Mm-hmm. It's hard. I mean, it's like, you know, if you measure your bust and your arms are up when you measure, it's different when you put your arms back down. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a little bit of a tilt, well, that kind of can skew your number as well. And there's grace in our clothing in terms of, you know, it's a boxier fit and things like that. But, you know, people measuring their waist, well, they measure it where they actually wear their pants, but it really yeah. should be up higher.
Yep.
Or where is the biggest part of my butt? I don't know. You know, it's a little bit tricky. And I get why people are like, I don't really want to bother with this. So if we can just simplify things and make it easier, then that's just for the better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm also curious, you talked about not wanting to overwhelm customers with too much information, but giving them what they need to get what, you know, what piece they want. Say, I imagine there's kind of the same concept with the people on your team and doing all the systematizing and documentation where yeah. everyone now has access to all this information. But how do you balance like training the team or getting the team on board with like, this is kind of your role. Here's the information you need to do it. But also here's all this other information that you could access without it getting kind of too overwhelming.
I think, again, it's the wonder of spreadsheets. There are spreadsheets that are for everybody. And then there are spreadsheets for, you know, a smaller team that need to know what is the full product line, you know, how much does each one cost, all of that. That's, you know, I don't give all of that information to everyone because it would be overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And so we have, I think we just try to give people the information they need to do their job. And if they're like, you know what, I really need to know this, then I'd be like, oh, well, let's add a column to this, to the spreadsheet. And our production spreadsheet has been evolving for a long time, sure. And I'm sure there'll be more, you know.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry, Allison. I protested at every extra, really another spreadsheet. I was like, okay, yeah, that does make sense. Mm-hmm. And not everybody needs to know that, but you and I need to know this.
Right, for sure. You know, like the what sizes are our best sellers? Mm-hmm. It's a huge question. And so I made a ginormous spreadsheet with our last year, 2 years of sales. And,
some surprises came out of that.
It was the medium and the extra large. Yep, those are our sizes that sell the most. Not large. It's just like, why not large? I don't know. But those are the sizes.
Yeah.
Or doing surveys with our customers that really targeted about how do you decide to buy things. Mm. And it was really enlightening. And we listen. We really listen to our customers. We really want to know. If we get two of the same piece back, mm-hmm. We're like, okay, what's going on with this? What is happening? And because we're so small, we're very agile. And we can be like, okay, let's take a look at this pattern. Let's see what's happening. Why is this?
Why are all the larges of this coming back? Yeah. Why have we had several larges come back?
Or exchanged for a different size. Then it's like, okay, there's a disconnect.
Yeah, it's like this is, the sizing isn't being very true right now. And, you know, with clothing, you can be like, well, this measures out properly. But when you put it on a body, it's like, well, that has changed. For whatever reason. And so we need to accommodate that. So there have been pieces where we have changed the sizing on it because it was like, yeah, that's not true to size. And again, that causes confusion. Mm-hmm. And we're like, okay. And because we have the pattern making software and all the other things, we can make those adjustments and make it right and make it easier for our customers.
And very quickly too. Mm-hmm. I can do this and have a new one printed off in 10 minutes and we're making a new sample to see how that is. And, you know, now that our system, you know, fits in with what the sales are, we don't have 40 of them in stock that are ill-fitting or not incorrect to the right measurements on the website. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of one thing leads into the other. And I really like the pull system and being really agile to be able to change things, make it better. And, you know, truly have that be the focus rather than, well, we got a bunch of these and we got to sell through them. So, you know, right. It's just like, that doesn't look good. We want to just be able to make the best thing possible and things change.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so about how many garments do you produce a year as a team? Do you have any idea, or roughly?
Oh, I didn't have my computer here. I would look it up on a spreadsheet.
There you go.
Yeah, Oh, man. I would say, let's see. I think it would be like about, I want to say it's like 200 a month.
Oh, wow.
We cut 180.
I was going to say, I remember 200. Like 60 something a week was an average.
Mm-hmm. That was back in the day though. Yeah. So, so I guess I would say about, so what we'll math that out, 2,400, which is 2,000 to 2,500.
A year. That's amazing. And how big did you say your team? Did you say there's 10 of you total?
There's 10 of us. Yeah. We have, well, we do a lot of cross training, so we have some people who both sew and cut the fabric, but we have two people who cut the fabric, and one of those people also sews, and then we have three other sewists. So those are really our production people, but we all hop in. I will sew things up because, you know, that's what I used to do, and Doug will go and cut things. Like, we're in a really busy time from our Earth Day sale, and it's all hands on deck, you know.
I put every single snap on every garment that's ever been shipped out of here. I do that.
And I inspect every single piece that goes through. So
another system once again,
that,
you know, now we have dedicated inspections. Every single piece goes through the whole process. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of this started in COVID time because, nobody could come to work. And so what we ended up doing was setting up our sewers with industrial machines at their home. Mm. And I would go around town and drop off and pick up a bin from their porch during that time. And it worked really, really well. And we were able to keep things going. And so we do have some people that still just primarily work at home. That's all they do. and bring in a bin and drop one off. And it just works great for everybody's lifestyle.
Yeah. Although I have to say, it's nice to have the flexibility, but now it's really great the having everybody back in this studio. I should say back, they're newer people, so they don't remember, they don't necessarily remember those, but those days. But we really work hard to have such a lovely community, and people want to work here. People want to be here. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's really fun. We have a great space that Doug has, you know, created. And, you know, I think right now everybody else is outside having lunch at the table, you know, and looking out at the forest and, you know,
sunny and 70.
It's sunny and 70, and there's a bluebird sitting on the garden. Yeah. It's just really
lovely.
Your
space is gorgeous. Like, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, we're really spoiled.
We've had some sewers that had come from cinder block windowless sewing dungeons, and it's like, oh my god,
yeah. So I do want to go back to the fabric. So you do all organic fabrics, right? That's kind of the big criteria.
I would say we do mostly organic fabrics.
Okay. I think there's hardly anything left that is not.
I think the one thing is our cone denim.
Cone denim, yes.
And that's a dead stock fabric.
And it's always got to be something. Yeah, that is the last. Yeah, it's either going to be organic or it's got to be dead stock stuff that was made in America, that the denim factory is shut down now and there's no more being made. And these are just rolls that we were lucky enough to get a hold of. Across the state in Detroit, Detroit Denim, after 15 years, they had closed down here last year. And them and along with, over a dozen other organic made in America brands. So
that was a rough year last year.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the landscape of the reality because, American labor cost and, material cost. Mm-hmm. And that's organic materials cost more, American labor is more. So in our sector, we lost a bunch of fellow companies. And so we were lucky enough to get some cone denim from them that was dead stock. And it's always got to be something.
Yeah. So like for a couple of summers in the past year, we've had a vegetable dyed fabric. So it's not organic, but it's vegetable dyed. So it's like there's an ecological impact from that. Printed cotton. Yeah. In general, I don't like to do printed cottons. I like to do yarn dyed cottons because, again, that's more environmentally sound. We try to make sure that where it's dyed, the dyeing process is ecologically sound or as best as it can be. You know, we can't go to all the places where the fabrics are made to check. We just cannot do that. So we kind of rely, we try to get things certified, but, we do the best we can.
Well, and the ones that don't, I've started sourcing stuff in the States here in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And thank God now with all the import tariff craziness going on, all of our French terry is grown, milled, and died here in the U.S.
Right, we were already trying to focus on that before all of this happened, but we're not solely organic, and I want to be upfront about that, but we do have a reason behind everything that we purchase, and trying to make it as conscious as we can. And like one of our most exciting ones it's beyond organic, is our color grown cotton. Where the Sally Reese's with Fox Fiber has made her life's work growing the different cotton colors. And so they're beautiful, like rusty brown and this lovely green, seafoam green, and then a cream color. And she gets them woven, and there's no dyes at all, but they're these beautiful patterns.
Yeah, so. And we had no idea until I was on a sustainability panel with Sally, and we It was incredible. I was like, what color? It doesn't just come in white.
Yeah.
It doesn't just grow white. It grows in other colors. Holy cow. And yeah, about 5,000 years ago in the Andes, they started finding this and Sally's put her life's work into breeding it to get the most vibrant colors out of seed plots every year and crossbreeding it with longer fiber, staple length fibers of Sea Island white cotton. So she's gotten the genetics of the color grown cotton, which is typically like an inch and a quarter staple length, to be longer where it can be more easily woven and used to make yarns. So she's incredible. And we buy the fabric she produces from her work to help support her work. Mm-hmm. And so that's an incredible fabric. Our jerseys, we're going to be getting all our next batch of jerseys.
We're hoping next year we'll have some new colors for our jersey. And this year has been French Terry, and the source that we had for that was kind of finishing out their colors. So we had custom dyed colors, which is another feature of what we do. So we try to have organic fabric, but then we have custom colors that are just for us. You're not going to find those colors anywhere else. And we know how those are dyed, and we know that that's done here in the United States. And we know that the water isn't poisoning somebody's stream down.
And it's all GOTS certified low impact dyes, and all the water that when it's done, it goes to a municipal system, which is cleaned and
able to deal with. They're looking for the chemicals in the dyes, so they're able to clean it out.
It's the best that can be done in the realm of getting stuff dyed. I mean, really, obviously the organic grown, but you can't get hot pink or maybe in a couple thousand years.
Color grown cotton and hot pink. Wow,
That would be that'll be fun.
That'd be a great field to take photos in. Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah, it seems like with each of your fabrics, you've really thought through. Okay, why is this important? Like, how does this particular fabric or the process it was made with, or the ingredients, and the dyes, like, how does that align with the overall vision and conscious clothing?
There are some real limits. It's why we don't have big fancy prints or anything like that. We might do like a tie dye or stamping or something like that. But it means we don't have like big wild patterns, because yarn dyed basically means you're going to have plaids or stripes, So there's limitations to it. And we know what those limitations are, but we feel like that's just part of our ethos. And it's like, if it doesn't hit these criteria, then we're not going to get that fabric. Doesn't matter. Oh, it's cheaper or it's whatever. It's like, nope, we're not going to get it. It doesn't fit who we are and what we're
absolutely
about.
And linen, which is like our primary material we're using here, well, that doesn't need pesticides. It's naturally pest resistant. And that's a naturally organic fiber.
Yep, right there. Exactly. And hemp is a big one that we try to put in. We don't use just hemp. We don't have just a straight hemp piece, but we do use it in our fleece and in our jersey, and it makes it really durable.
Yeah, absolutely. So you get more wears out of it, and you get the softness from the organic cotton.
Right.
It's always organic cotton, and then some level of hemp in it. It's usually like 55 organic cotton. Yeah, 55 hemp, something like that.
Or vice versa.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, just some of the best materials that you can find.
Yeah,
and also how the fibers are processed. For example, some people are like, well, bamboo rayon is amazing. And it's like, no, it really isn't, because the chemicals they have to use to make the bamboo into the rayon is so environmentally disastrous. So it's like, nope, we don't do that. It has to be, there's no chemical processes used in how the fabrics are made either.
So. And we're at that point in time where you know, we're trying to deal with what's going on, especially with, I see so many, it's made from recycled polyester. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, that's terrible. That's an awful idea. Let's take plastic and shred it up finer into finer microplastics and then launder it and let that go into the waterways. It's like, just don't use that material. Mm-hmm. How about right. that?
Yeah, the polyester also, like, if they keep it in the recycling, like if you're using it for pop cans or whatever, it can be re-recycled. But if you put it in fabric, it can no longer be recycled.
Yeah.
So you're taking it out. So again, like we've done a lot of our research on what to do. And we just find that the plant-based fibers that are not using a chemical to make it are the best ones for us and what we're about.
For sure. And our website too, we try to be more than just a clothing company that's selling stuff. We have a resource page where we try to help educate people if they want to know more about something. You know, we have some resources that can help you learn a little bit more about that. Yeah. I mean, you'd be surprised at, you know, people just don't know. And maybe clothing isn't their focus, whereas I think people listening to the podcast, clothing definitely is. But yeah, you just don't know what people know or not about the materials in their clothing. So
for sure.
Try to educate people and be more aware.
Yeah. So in the 23 years that you've been in business, how have you seen the industry change, but also maybe kind of the consumer response to sustainability in these types of natural and organic fibers change?
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, in the beginning, we were so unique, you know, and I often joke we'd always get somebody coming by our booth if we were vending somewhere and, oh, hemp shirts, can you smoke it? Ha, ha, ha. But after you got through the jokes, you could kind of talk about something real and meaningful. And they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know hemp, you could get a bunch more wears out of it than a cotton garment. And so that education, yeah, we used to be real special because no one was doing it and because it costs so much and all the big companies weren't going to do that. But as soon as the greenwashing movement became kind of more mainstream, I mean, you can get a 2-pack of organic t-shirts at Target right now, you know, so that specialness has really disappeared. But I think people's awareness has grown, which is fantastic. And, you know, I never looked at it as a competition thing like, oh, we're not special anymore because everyone's doing this now. I'm like, that's great because, you know, people are getting smarter and being more conscious about our limited resources here on this beautiful planet we're all lucky enough to be a part of for a brief moment. So,
and I would say we still are very special because of our whole system, because we design, pattern, cut, sew, and ship all out of the same building.
Absolutely.
And there's only 2% of our clothing is made in the United States. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's been designed or anything else. And so I still think we have something really special to offer.
I agree.
Absolutely.
And keeping everything in-house, very human-centered. I mean, yeah, you can buy those Target t-shirts, but where were they made? How were the people treated?
Yep.
How was the dyeing done? Sure. You know, I mean, there's so many features, and there's like the greenwashing, there's good sides to it, but there's also really dark sides. And, you know, we continue to try and be a voice of education and of like, hey, this can be done differently, and here's how. And we don't need to buy 2 packs of t-shirts. Inviting people to continue to ask questions. Okay, yes, it's organic fabric, but how is it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are all the things that impact the earth and us. And what are you putting on your skin? You know, all of those things. We continue to be a voice, and I feel really proud of that. And I'm like, yeah, we are still unique.
Absolutely, yeah. I didn't mean to say
no,
but just like, it was just so interesting to see.
Yeah,
or
forefront in the consumer's mind. Like they're starting to ask more about the organic or the natural.
Yeah.
For sure. Whereas before, it just wasn't even on the map. I mean, Rose could barely even find fabric.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, hemp traders, I forget the guy's name, but he was like the pioneer guy that went to somewhere in, I think in Vietnam or over there to get hemp, you know, yarns produced and actually, you know, got some land, got some people to grow the hemp. And because they had the laws to allow it, where, you know, it certainly wasn't available to do that here. And, you know, and started producing yarns and product and was able to start getting yardage from him. But I mean, that was like one of the, he was like the guy, that was it. Lawrence, I forget his last name, but anyways, there was nobody offering that material. And then it just slowly started getting a little more traction. And
And I mean, I think too that there's, the social media and internet, there's, you know, information gets passed a lot quicker. And I think there's a whole generation now, you know, of millennials, we're both Gen X. So, you know, who were raised with recycling and thinking about what we're putting in the earth and all of those things. And I think they have really elevated the conversation and they find it very important. And so, you know, I'm really grateful that all the education that's happened in the last 40 years is making a difference. And not just with clothing, but what we eat and, you know, everything. And I'm glad we have been a part of that and we hope to be continuing to be a part of it. But, you know, my child who loves conscious clothing, you know, she has so many rules about buying clothes. And I'm like, wow, where did you get that from? Because it wasn't for me, you know, before I worked at Conscious Clothing. And she's like, no, Mom, you need to know and you need to make all these conscious decisions because where we put our money is a big part of where our voice is in this society. Absolutely. Whether you like it or not, that's the truth. So where am I going to put my money?
Definitely. Yeah. And that's been my big mission. Whenever we get an opportunity to speak with someone like you is making the point that, everybody, you can vote with your dollars and make change happen that way. Absolutely. That's how we're going to do this. And it's, you know, hearts and minds, and it's one person at a time
and educate and just be a bright voice out in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I just love being an example of how something can be done in an ethical, fun, and beautiful way and make beautiful things for people that care enough to support something like what we're doing. Right. It's just so cool.
Yeah, it really is. Kind of in the near future, what's a new project or new initiative or new focus that you both are working on in order to continue to create the everyday life, but also kind of like the bigger picture industry change that you're wanting to see?
I think our big thing is the standardizing. We've almost spoken of it like it's done and it's not. I'm hoping for the fall, but we'll see. And I think I'm starting to look more into the deadstock fabric world. Still has to fit within our guidelines, but just to, you know, make sure fabrics aren't being put right into the landfill. That's one of the things I've been thinking about. I would like to get almost all of our colors to be custom colors, because we do have really good control over it, over how it's made and all of that. And my other goal is to make things like jumpsuits and make them more petite and tall and see how we can fit more bodies into our clothing.
For sure. And that, which is, as you know, Allison, as a pattern maker, well, you've got X and Y dimensions, but now you got the Z dimension with a jumpsuit. So yeah. And making that's all those variations. Petite.
To fit is the jumpsuit, I think.
Just make sure it fits all the things. Actually, my husband said to me the other day, he's like, "You never wear jumpsuits." And I was like, yeah, I don't have a jumpsuit body.
Neither do I. I don't think I own a single one.
No, because it just like the too many components that aren't the typical. So
yeah,
you know.
But we're gonna do it, and we're gonna offer it in the tall and the petite,
and model that sucker.
Yeah, and it's we've had a bunch of really successful jumpsuit designs. Yeah. They are really cool. But again, you get that other dimension going, and there's a lot of fit complications for people. Mm-hmm. So
I just want us to have some time to really look at it, and again, put it on people's bodies and figure out what's really working for actual humans, and not just the dress form, and not just what the math is saying it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is, if you could communicate just one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
Ooh, simplicity.
Do we each get one?
I think you each get one, yes.
That's my word, simplicity.
Simplicity. Yes. I think it's maybe two words, human-focused.
I can see how both of those are really woven through kind of everything you shared in this interview and kind of everything I've seen from conscious clothing. You're trying to make the conscious choice kind of as simple as possible for people, and as simple and beautiful of a life for you and your team as well, which is so great.
Definitely. There's already enough complexities going on, and if you have something nice and simple, you can always work it in with the rest of your complications, and it'll be great. Mm-hmm.
Yep, sure.
Well, this has been such a great conversation. Thank you both for joining me, Doug and Liz. Where can people find more about Conscious Clothing online?
That would be at consciousclothing.net. We have a pretty big website, but I love the resource page, and you can learn about us on our about page, but also check out that resource page. We have some links to some great documentaries and resources.
Yep. We also have a big social media presence. So Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. So if you want to see the really fun parts and sort of the day-to-day and some really great shenanigans, I would go to Instagram and follow us there, because we do have a lot of fun here, and our social media people are great and make things really interesting. So
at Conscious Clothing.
Cool.
Yeah, at Conscious.
Well, so great. I will put links to all those in the show notes for people to check you out, and have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Allison. Thanks, everybody.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.